Meow.
Meow, meow.
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 Meow, meow, meow.
Meow, meow.
Trigger warning. This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting live from the back alleys of Babylon. Sipping mezcal, we babysit the binary blip inside your brain with a combination of badinage and technological tabulations, helping to sacralize your senses to the salacious songs of liberty. And we should remind you all that the Freedom Fiends is governed by a BIPCOT, no government license, which, well, it just keeps the government at bay. You can learn more at BIPCOT.org. And joining us this lovely Saturday afternoon is, who do we have here?
Well, this is Hugo Jeremy from Mexico City.
It's Jeremy from New Yorkistan.
I think we have West Hollywood.
Yeah. So we're like covering all the hemispheres and longitudes and latitudes and all that good stuff.
The sun always shines somewhere with some fiend.
Amen.
Much to the fear and horror of intelligence agencies everywhere.
Yeah. I was just
decentralized.
I was just listening to the announcement about the BIPCOT license, and I was thinking, you know, this works so much better than any constitution to keep the government at bay.
Did you see earlier this week, James Babb posted a video, and he went to get his license renewed, and he wore an eye patch like a pirate, and he had the Dread Pirate Roberts shirt, and then he also had his little BIPCOT button, and the button got in the picture of, you know, his license picture. So his government license is, I guess, kind of negated by the BIPCOT license.
Yeah. If it really worked as well as we would like, that photo would have been, you know, wouldn't have come out all right. Just, you know, jam the camera or do something.
Well, you know, the way I look at it is, I mean, back in my patriot constitutionalist whatever days, I did the whole, you know, without prejudice UCC thing, you know, signing that above my name on my license, and they thought I was a nut and didn't want to give me one, but they finally did. And I'm sure there's some legal mumbo jumbo to that may be accurate, but you know, it's not funny. And it's just kind of funny to have a BIPCOT button or a sticker on your license. So neither one will really keep, you know, if they want to come after you, they're gonna. So, but at least with the BIPCOT, it's cool and funny.
Sure. Sure.
Well, yeah, they're,
What do we have to? They
don't have to realize it, but they're going to be, you know, they could be humiliated afterwards for harassing you. So that's what I plan on doing. I know. Lisa's actually talked about that too. We've discussed getting her an actual BIPCOT license or registration, because I was going to test it out, but we decided that she probably runs a lot less risk of being shot by the cops.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
And she seems to be willing to test it, so we may work on that at some point. I don't even think my license is valid anymore, so I'm pretty sure they suspended it multiple times by now. So.
Mm.
Why not?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just a cop magnet, man. They love to pull me over. Must be that car that I drive around that's falling apart and has no sticker on it.
Oh, yeah, well. Probably. I used to get pulled over a lot. Well, you know, by driving while young. Now I don't have that anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
it was crazy that earlier this week there was a fire at an apartment building on the same road as me, pretty much across the street. So my whole driveway and road was blocked off, and man, there was cops everywhere. It was freaking me out. Like, I had to get up and go to work, and you know, like I said, I don't have certain stickers and needed things on my car, and I had to drive through like two state troopers and like six city cops. It was very nerve-wracking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then one cop just assumed, like,
the, you know, it was across the street or whatever, but he just literally parked sideways in my driveway, and I have a wide driveway, and he parked right in the middle, blocking my entire driveway. And we're talking at 7:30 in the morning when most people get up and get ready to go to work. And I was like, hey, you gonna move that thing so I can go to work?
Oh, yeah, sure, sure. Yeah, just give me a minute.
Yeah,
fun. You cannot say that to them if they ask you to move.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. No. You have about 0.3 seconds to get towards your car before you're put on the ground. So.
Hey, Bill. These are. Let's stop talking about the police, because you know.
Yeah, they're square.
It's bad mojo. Yeah. Yeah. So, what do I have to for today? I was thinking about this thing that has got me worried for about, I don't know, a year or more, is that. I think there comes a time where we have to separate the wheat from the chaff. And that is, it used to be pretty clear who Liberty people were and who the right was. And at some point it got blurred. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear cut. But
it should be.
I guess, well, you know, we've seen a lot of compromises, especially lately, with the whole Donald Trump thing. You know, I think was it last week Walter Block came out in defense of Donald Trump, and a lot of people that I've seen, you know, conservatives and patriot groups and some libertarians are defending him and even thinking about supporting him. And you know, a lot of it is because he has a shot of winning the presidency. Like, that even matters. But one of the arguments I hear all the time is you know, he's anti-establishment, and I've got to laugh. You know, I've got to laugh because
you got to what?
You got to define what the establishment is. It's not just, you know, elected people. The establishment is, well, the balance of power that actually exists around people who are connected, people who have all the licenses and permissions and all that. That would be the establishment. I don't know. Maybe you're not a politician or not a career politician, but you can still be part of the establishment. Wouldn't you say that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the media, the corporate media is part of that establishment. They uphold the narrative that drives the people. And the basic thing that I've seen this last year, I think it grew out of an honest effort by the Ron Paul campaign in 2012, where a lot of those individuals really wanted to affect change. And they were shot down. So now what you have is this Trump phenomena, this anti-establishment, which it's not. To me, it's the biggest con that's being portrayed upon the people. You know, let's elect this guy or this group of people, and they're actually going to listen to us and affect this change. And they're just setting us up, you know. And it just seems kind of ridiculous to me that people are like, well, you know, I know he doesn't really follow a lot of our libertarian ideals, you know, he doesn't really follow the non-aggression principle, for example, but he's not as bad as the others, so, and he's got a real shot at winning, he's our in, right? So we'll go with him, and it's like, I don't see how you can compromise your morals and your values. I mean, I understand if you're voting, you already are, but come on, man.
Well, that's part of the problem, at least from what I've seen in the more, I guess, the libertarian end of the community, where there's a lot of people that don't think that they're violating any principles or morals by voting. So there, I think that's where a lot of the confusion comes. That's where it starts to get muddled, and people, you know, I mean, I have my issues with the Libertarian Party as it is. I don't think they're a very good representation of libertarianism. They, at least, you know, my local party here in New York, they were willing to take pretty much anybody, because they were such a small number that when I left them, they had somebody running who was admittedly not a libertarian, but just the same thing. He had some libertarian ideas, so it's the best we can do. And that's throwing everything out the window and saying that the ends justify the means somehow. And I just can't accept that. But apparently a lot of other people can.
Yeah, apparently. I think part of it, the last time I was on The Fiends a couple of weeks ago, I made the comment that libertarians feel like the redheaded stepchild. You know, they feel neglected and marginalized. And I mean, even serious, and this is not I don't support this individual, but even so-called serious libertarian people like, you know, the big one that's running there, Gary Johnson. Oh. I know. But you rightfully laugh, but other people who have no idea what he's about and just think he's a libertarian and don't really understand what libertarianism is, they laugh at him too. So I think that's why you're seeing this push for libertarians to kind of compromise and go with the flow and really sell their souls so they'll be accepted, because they think, you know, what is that old adage that, you know, we've got to get in the system and change it from within or some nonsense?
This is my my libertarian shrink hat. We have too many libertarians who don't love themselves enough to hold themselves to standards, high standards, about things like, if you're going to go in and compromise yourself in a voting booth, it better be for some damn good reason. Yeah. And presidential elections are never a good reason. And this particular choice, I love Walter Block, so that's, I'm not even going there. He's terrific. But the support for Trump is anything other than some bizarre, contrarian statement of being weird. Voting for any of these freaks is unfathomable to me. Horrible. But yes, there's also a divide between libertarians who kind of come out of the punk rock world or are more hardened and working class. They tend to be less willing to compromise. Those who are a little more invested in being perceived as normal and untroubled, and those who are quite, you know, frankly, nerdy and not as socially adept, tend to be much more willing to compromise in very quickly, in very embarrassing ways.
I'm nerdy and I don't compromise.
Well,
and
yeah,
not fiends. I'm talking about the other libertarians, the non fiends,
the kind that we have in a certain state in New England. You mean that seem to just think that they can run the show and work from within the system. Those kind.
I would just pose one example, though. There's some libertarians who shun the word anarchist because they don't want to be marginalized, and then for some other reason, people will always have a reason to marginalize you. So just call yourself an anarchist.
But I love calling myself an anarchist. I'll tell you why when we get back.
We'll be back.
Me too.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Anti-war, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
Meow! Meow. Yes, meow. You know, if cats ran the world, this the world would be a better place. I'm just saying.
Yeah. Yeah. There wouldn't be so much confusion. They're pretty assertive. And things would be definitely would be different. Angela, are you there?
I am here.
It's the Fiends back with Jeremy and Angela and Chandler and Hugo from Mexico City. That's me. And we were talking before about, we're doing a bit of libertarian gossiping, right?
I hope so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's so much fun.
It is. It is, even if in our little circle of people. But sure it is. And we were talking before about Walter Block, and there's been some outrage at him supporting Donald Trump for the presidency. But, you know, it's just a little bit more of the same when Ron Paul was – I'm going to try to compare Ron Paul to Donald Trump, but it's the same principle. You gotta go for the whoever's running and pick the least bad of all and just throw yourself in their arms. And I don't know what your opinion is on this, guys. Guys and gals, I'm gonna be inclusive here. And well, I don't know, Angela. What do you think about Walter Block?
Well, Walter's great. No, Walter's terrific. Let Walter be Walter, and let Walter be great. The Donald Trump, yeah, that's kind of a fascist dude. Donald Trump. He's got some really right-wingy positions, and on foreign policy, even though. I know this is the whole disclaimer. We have to acknowledge that, yes, Donald Trump had the stones to say the Iraq war was a bunch of nonsense and that the Bush family is kind of full of nonsense. And, you know, he's smart to say, yeah, you know, he wants to negotiate with Putin. Yeah, you should want to make peace, not war with crazy people with nukes. And you know, he's right about defunding NATO. Those are all things, but there's like literally I could sit here and list about 40 things he has said that are so horrible and so over the top, cartoonishly fascist. It's a parody of a right wing kook.
Do you think that the logical things that he said that you just mentioned, do you think that that's just he's saying that because he knows that he needs to form this narrative to gain the support and kind of rope the people in?
Well, if he's trying to, let's say, follow a, I don't know, maybe not so much a right-wing populist, but maybe sort of a paleo-conservative line, it sort of makes sense, you know. That and that's where, you know, the closing up the borders and being against war kind of makes sense in the paleo-con, in the paleo-conservative world. And that is a position. There's people who take that, you know, sort of, you know, there's certain that is a political type. But, you know, but I don't know who, I mean, unless he's really super crafty and he's really trying to appeal to the most amount of working class people from as many different groups as possible. He's rounded up this really, I mean, there's like no coherent ideology. For example, he, you know, says like, I like Planned Parenthood. He doesn't like abortion, but he thinks Planned Parenthood's great and women's health is great. And he thinks he's going to be better. And he said this, he's going to be better on women's health than Hillary Clinton. That's not necessarily a typical conservative thing to say, but it's in a, you know, I'm trying to understand what his line of thinking is. I think it is, you know, it's trade. He's trying to, you know, trade. That's something that a lot of working class people are concerned about. And because we have a media that frames everything in a way that benefits upper classes, it's impossible to understand all the differences between free and fair trade, and if we have free trade, and what these agree, like things like NAFTA and so on, what are they? You know, we don't know. You know, it's all these things that, you know, that information that most of the public doesn't have easy access to or doesn't think about. So, you know, he's running to the left on certain things, on war, on trade, and on women, Planned Parenthood, but then he's running to the far right on things like, you know, the whole issue, this whole discussion of Muslims. I mean, it's just embarrassing. But
well, he's got that very like populist personality, but he knows how to round them up and you know, take in the moderate viewpoints too. That's why I think it's kind of a narrative just to rope as many people in. Like one of the things that really struck me was his speech to AIPAC earlier in the week. You know, a lot of people said, well, he has to go there and speak to AIPAC because they have such influence in U.S. politics. And that may be true, but boy, did he kiss Israel's butt. I mean, he just said, he went over the top. So, I mean, so I know he's playing his cards, right? And that just makes him another politician. Why do you want to support that kind of nonsense?
Why would you need?
If you're a libertarian.
Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean. This is what radio sounds like now. My fellow sheep, election season is upon us. Are you one of the 12% of Americans who still approves of our government? Then we need your help to force the other 88% into compliance. Our democracy depends on it. We're an organization called Citizens Against Too Much Unfettered Freedom, or CATMUF. CATMUF is a bipartisan flock of sheep whose goal is expanding government until nothing else remains. Because the government is here to help you. How can you help CATMUF help you? By only voting for candidates dedicated to expanding government. It's easy. You don't need to study the issues. No matter what a politician says when running for office, they're all dedicated to expanding government. And make sure you tell all your friends and family to vote for more government. Here at CATMUF, we don't care if you vote Democrat or Republican, as long as you vote for candidates committed to growing our federal family. CATMUF. Because folks just aren't smart enough to handle real freedom.
Meow.
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 My kitty is staring at me with evil eyes. Because I'm not letting him sit on my lap right now.
I smell a reptile. I smell a reptilian. At least on the airwaves right now.
And aren't those the ones that like run the world in a back room or something?
Yeah, you know whose eyes. You know they have sideways eyelids and you know the scaly skin and you never know. You never know. And we were talking about one of those. Probably we don't know. But I've been approached and confused and people have confused me with an alt-rightist on social media, and they have been exceedingly kind to me, thinking I'm one of them. And well, I don't know. I don't know if that's a marketing tactic, but I've had to just go out and say some outrageous things to get those people off my networks. Have you had that experience?
did you have to go take a shower after because you felt dirty associating with those people?
Yeah. But I did just go all libertarian macho flash on them. On the whatever policies that would scare them, and you know, drug legalization and free immigration, whatever I had to say to get those people off my back, and they finally realized.
I had a similar.
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say I had a similar experience, but I got called a right wing conspiracy nut because I said something about Hillary Clinton, and I was like, wow. All right. I mean, I must be doing something right because I got banned from the Being Liberal Facebook page and then I got called a right-wing conspiracy nut. So both sides seem to hate me.
Yeah. Well, that's usually a good day if you have it happen at the same time.
That's when you know you got your libertarian street cred.
Exactly.
You'd be shunned by everybody.
I mean, it happens all the time, but I had kind of gotten used to it not happening. But now with the election cycle in full swing, like people who normally don't discuss politics are out screaming at you if you make any comment anywhere about anything that could possibly be misconstrued as something against the person they're thinking about voting for. It's just that instantaneous, you know, they're just every one of them has a false dichotomy built into their head that it's if you say something against what they believe, you have to be on this other side.
Exactly.
That's all that exists to them.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
They don't realize that there's shades of gray and people that don't even, you know, participate at all.
Oh, that's such a foreign idea. I made a sticker or button, you know, whatever graphic you earlier this week, and it's basically just says, you know, nobody for 2016, the standard, you know, anarchist thing. And, you know, it's got a little Facebook middle finger type thing and yellow and black. And I showed that to a couple of, I don't know if I'd call them right wingers, but, you know, definitely more on that side of things. And they found it amusing. And I'm like, it really is, because why do you need a master? And you know what kills me too is people, like you said, now that it's the political season, everyone's so ramped up when they're usually not, and all they're talking about is like the president, you know, the reality show that is the run for the presidency. But I mean, if you want to talk about politics, what about those cats that are running for Congress? And then even on your local level, the thieves in the local level that rob you every day, but no one seems to pay attention to that.
I don't know.
You know, you are...
Most people, well... Sorry, go ahead, Hugo.
Actually, the Emeritus Fiend, Ben Stone, which we... Well, I really like him, and he's been an inspiration for many of us. He changed my position on one of the libertarian topics there. I used to think that local government was better than far away or federal government, and he changed my mind on that. And now you were just talking about those people, local politicians, and you know the dog catcher that gets elected. Well, it doesn't get elected anywhere, but sheriffs do, and those are the people doing the oppression locally. And aren't any better than the federal politicians. People don't care about those; they care about the president.
Fiend phone.
Somebody's back.
That's what gets put in their face all the time. Oh, got droned for a minute. Are you back, Chandler?
temporarily droned. But yeah,
hopefully they return. But they don't. I know people that do care, but the ones that do care about that don't seem to care about the presidency. They seem to have a single focus. It's either we'll focus on the locals or we'll focus on the big stuff. But we won't focus on both, and we won't realize that they're both just as screwed up.
yeah, and it's one of the worst things that as you were saying before, every topic is now just one-dimensional. Either you're with us or you're with the other party or the other position. Either we were talking about Israel before, but apparently if you're not an Israel supporter, you're somehow an extremist and a terrorist. Or you could be supporting if you're not condemning. I don't know if you're not kissing Israel's political lobbies, but then somehow you are with the terrorists, and that happens to every position, that happens to every topic in come election time.
Oh, well, when it comes to Israel, it happens all the time. I've been called an anti-Semite, I don't know how many times, just for speaking up about the things Israel has done, and I'm like, no, that's not how this works. I'm sorry.
But that's mostly confined to the U.S., though. The rest of the world, it pretty clearly understands the whole issue of apartheid. Just as we're in the same situation with, as you know, we're the South Africa in the 80s, where the U.S. was like the last country to acknowledge, there's probably apartheid's not such a cool idea.
Are you talking about apartheid inside Israel, right?
Well, yeah, I think Scott Horton does a really great job explaining this, and he's done a lot of shows on this, but you have, aspects of, Palestinians living within Israel, where it's basically like the Jim Crow South. Outside, and it's the way Gaza's set up, which is, people describe it as a large outdoor concentration camp. Like, these sorts of things, I've certainly fall under the category of racial hierarchy and racial separation. And specifically, the reason why they're of interest, why they should be of some thought to anarchists is that, a state-mandated racial hierarchy just is unbelievably pure evil.
Yes, it is.
But it's okay because it's Israel.
Well, that's for one, and people have also, I've listened comparisons between what Christians and Muslims can do in Israel as this great proof that Israel is so much that the social organization in Israel put in by the government is somehow okay because people have less freedoms. Everybody has less freedoms, let's say in Syria or in Oman or somewhere else.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting how it's always framed as a religious thing, and no one addresses the root cause. It's the state, whether you're talking about Israel or Iran or even the United States, it's the state that groups those people into collectives and oppresses them. And no one really wants to address that because the state is supposed to be this wonderful arbiter of social justice, which I don't know whose idea that was, but it seems kind of ridiculous to me.
Well, sure. Without the state, there'd be utter chaos.
Right.
Couldn't have that.
Well, yeah, it's like going back to when we were talking about, how we call ourselves, some of us anyway, call ourselves anarchists proudly as opposed to libertarians. One of the main reasons I do that is because it makes people go, huh? And it gives you an opening to kind of explain some very simple common principles that they may not have been exposed to. And, usually I'll get the, oh, well, I agree with you, but. But if you get that, you've got room to work with it.
Which probably was the case about 20 years ago if you said you were a libertarian, but that's no longer true.
Yeah, now they just laugh at you if you're a libertarian.
Yeah, or say, you know, just like Ted Cruz is. There was a guy.
No, Glenn Beck was the libertarian, right?
Yeah.
He claims to be.
Another classical liberal there.
I know a lobbyist in Washington, D.C. who came here to Mexico a couple of years ago, and I don't know him personally. I've worked with organizations that have something in common with that guy. And he was telling me a couple of years ago, you know, this guy, Ted Cruz, he's a senator. He's up and coming. He's really libertarian in some positions. And I was really wary of that because everybody says that. And come the time, I found out who he was, and well, he wasn't a libertarian. He's not a libertarian. But need we say that?
It seems like it's trendy in some circles to say you're a libertarian, and then in others you're just laughed at. So I guess you really can't win. That's why I don't go with that. I don't really like labels anyway. I've gotten to like Ernest Hancock's, you know, I just believe in leave me alone-ism. I think that accurately describes me. Just leave me alone and we're all good.
That's a better label for sure.
And government by definition can't do that. So there you go.
Yeah, they can play cool by saying they're libertarians.
It has gained some popularity. So there's plenty of people out there that just use the term just because. I mean, politicians do it all the time because they think it'll get them in with a certain group. And
I'm one of you.
Exactly.
It was hip.
Yeah, but that's what I said. That's why I have a problem with the Libertarian Party in general, because they're all compromising their principles left and right. I argue with them all the time. I'm like, I used to be one of you. You guys aren't following the principles. You're rejecting the fundamental principle.
So
you can't participate and still abide by the NAP. I'm sorry.
I'm curious as to what you guys' opinion is. I've had this discussion both, you know, I think on the Fiends and just with friends in general. You know, a lot of us don't believe in voting and choosing masters and imposing our will upon other people. But do you believe in voting in self-defense, like on a local level, you know, like the city ordinances or, you know, bond issues or whatever that are going to affect you directly? Do you believe in do you think it compromises your principles to go and vote against that sort of thing?
Well, I would say I wouldn't ever vote for a person. If it were the case that there's a vote on some policy or some law, and I could vote in favor of more liberty, I could probably do that. Never for a person, because on the person, you're just giving them a blank check, because any decision is not, you know, is not binding for them. That's what I would do. I don't vote anyway, but theoretically.
Yeah, for me, like voting for ballot measures and stuff, you know, city ordinances, stuff like that. That was the only thing for a while that I could see as the Spooner argument, you know, the slave voting for less beatings. That's the only way I could see that actually working. But I've even given up on that because I think it just gives false hope to the conservatives and other libertarians that go, oh, look, the system works.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Are you sick of government lackeys who say, you didn't build that? Are you tired of elitists like Barack Obama and Al Gore taking credit for the web while trying to take over the web? Are you disgusted by experts whose concept of the internet is that it's a series of tubes? Take back the free market of computing by encouraging software developers to adopt the BIPCOT NoGov license. The BIPCOT NoGov license allows any use or modification except by governments. Go to BIPCOT.org. That's Bravo, India, Papa, Charlie, Oscar, Tango.org.
Meow, 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 meow.
So, voting in self-defense. Is there such a thing, Angela?
I understand the theories of it, and I respect why some of my fellow anarchists do that. It's not something I would do, but I'm not interested necessarily in shaming people over it. From a purely pragmatic standpoint, though, I don't know why someone would necessarily use their time that way when You know, unless it's a very small local election on a very narrow issue, I don't know what, I mean, that's not a particularly good use of one's time. Your vote doesn't mean that much. It certainly in presidential elections doesn't. I mean, there's too many votes being cast. It doesn't matter what you do or don't do.
Yeah, I would agree. And since I asked the question, I'll answer it too. I used to believe it. I don't anymore. I won't vote. And I know a lot of people think that's heresy. But the basic conclusion I've come to, just seeing it on a local level, you know, bond issues and that sort of thing, if the local governments and administrators and whatever want to accomplish something, they want to pass a tax, they want to pass a bond or whatever, they will do it regardless of whether you vote for it or not. If you vote it down, it'll just come back in another form. Or they'll do it by administrative fiat. So I agree with you, Angela, that your time is better spent maybe just, you know, reading a book or going and talking to somebody. You know, something.
Right. I mean, yeah, something that's of life value. But, I mean, let's just say you really do want to make political change. Running for office yourself is not a good idea. Voting for people is not a good idea. I think that's probably, that ground's probably been covered a million times on the show. But the, you know, if you want to make change, you know, and you put a local initiative on a ballot to get something repealed or something deprioritized or decriminalized, you know, that's at least something tangible in terms of, I mean, yes, it's begging for one's rights and it is humiliating, but in a very pragmatic way, you know, certain things, I mean, like, you know, what, just sort of a priorities. I mean, I take a very radical line on anarchism in terms of my ideology, but I do understand, you know, some of the immediacy of certain incrementalism. I mean, it's ridiculous that, you know, adults have to ask permission to put an herb in their body, for example, but for people to have the cancer patients and the sick and all kinds of people to have the peace of mind that they're not going to have their door broken down or be, you know, handcuffed and taken away for 10 years or be killed over it. And yeah, you had to do, people had to do political action for that and beg for their rights, but that was something that was actual change. You know, what difference is it possible to make which jerk is the emperor? I hate electoral politics. I find every aspect about it corrosive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think if 2012 didn't illustrate the whole absurdity of national politics, I think this year will, because, you know, supposedly, and I say supposedly, the GOP wants to shut out Trump and they're going to, you know, deny him the delegates and the brokered convention and super delegates and all that. And, you know, it's all nonsense. I mean, you had a guy that came out and said that, you know, the voters don't elect the politicians, the super delegates do. And it's like, really? So that's like in your face. You understand that now. You've seen it in the mainstream media. Why would you waste your time participating? I just don't understand why people, you know, I don't even understand the need for a slave master, but if you need one, why wouldn't you, I don't know, try some other way to do it?
Yeah,
well, crazy. That's all they know. It's grasping at straws. I mean, the only thing, I don't know. I used to hold that view that the, you know, ballot measure and stuff were at least, you know, that was a self-defense thing. But for me, I posed the argument recently that I think it's actually more pragmatic to not participate and actually spend the same amount of time, energy, and possibly money you would have put into trying to get somebody elected, try to get some ballot measure done, to try to spend that same amount of time, energy, and money to help make the state obsolete rather than trying to beg for permission to get stuff done.
Yes.
Have you tried?
I'm a big proponent of noncompliance. I really think that you get 5 to 10% of any population anywhere just saying no to things, stuff will change.
Yep.
You don't have to beg them to do stuff. You make it unenforceable. And you don't have to be violent about it. You just say no. So I think if people spent more time doing that, the things would get a heck of a lot better, a heck of a lot faster. People are just scared, brother. Though.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the consequences for saying no can be pretty harsh sometimes.
Oh no, I get it.
when you try to,
you got to make.
When you try to recruit those people, what are their answers? You know, it's kind of hard.
No, it's scary, but you know, I don't know.
Change is scary, but it's often good.
Well, exactly. I always think of that Mark Twain quote about, you know, in the beginning, the Patriot's a scarce man.
Yep.
So.
All right. We'll be back.
Hey, this is Squiscar Squigelps from Death Clocks. And you are listening to the Freedoms Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess it says worms now. So there you go.
Tired of those old Freedom Fiends buttons? Well, the Freedom Fiends have new button designs.
As always, it's only $10 for 10 buttons, and you'll get these nifty designs. Buy sheep, for sheep, on sheep.
State speech is hate speech.
Two designs for Guns and Weed, the Road to Freedom.
Three designs for Fiend Phone.
Bipcot No Gov.
A Freedom Fiends Worms button.
And ask me about my worms.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
And now they're bigger buttons.
They used to be 1 1/4 inch. Now they're 1 3/4 inch. Dan, they're bigger buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting through the Libertarian Education Center's low-orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Peace Plaza, on the artificial satellite LibPayer 2017, in the Alpha Centauri region. Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no-government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So we are back for the second hour. This is Jeremy. I'm here with Chandler, Hugo, and Angela, and we were talking in the break, and beforehand, Angela had brought up a subject that we all kind of found kind of interesting, and I'd like to hear you talk a little more, the difference between pro-free speech and versus anti-PC, and there's a difference that people seem to be confusing, I guess.
Well, okay, and this, gosh, I hate falling into this role of, you know, this my grumpy old anarchist woman's criticism of the libertarian movement every week.
You do it so well.
it's you know, our right libertarian is opposed to, I guess, the left libertarians. This is really more describes cliques than I think real ideological differences, but that's another topic. The sort of the right libertarian part of the movement is understandably, you know, upset about the way social justice warrior behavior kind of distorts certain things and often sometimes can be horribly misguided with some horrible results, and concerned about, you know, an introduction of a more PC movement, you know where there's too much emphasis on trying to censor what people say. Those are real things. I mean, people don't, you know, want to be stifled. They don't want to have their lives destroyed for having a different opinion. Being able to express oneself is a very basic human thing. I mean, that's what we all do. It's not even like a need. It's just a thing that we do. So, you know, those are all real concerns. But, and I think this is somewhat independent of the Trump phenomenon, but the reason why we're having this probably is because there is so much of an embrace or tolerance of Trump and the libertarian movement is the, and when I say that there's a huge embrace, it really isn't just a very, it's a minority that's particularly loud and vociferous about it, but what other things have come into the movement are, is I've seen more of a tolerance for what they now call the alt-right, which is the politically correct version of saying, you know, neo-Nazis and virulent, the far-right racists, and then some other weird ideologies. So that, you know, I feel like there's a bit, it's one thing that, you know, absolutely stand up for the rights of these people to exist and speak and, you know, live their lives as long as they live in peace. But it's another thing to start, let's say, welcoming them onto podcasts or, you know, making, you know, them jousting in public with prominent libertarian thinkers, and, you know, in a cute way so that there's this adorable interaction. I think there needs to be less adorableness between the libertarians and the you know, the people who might have been associated with Breitbart and people who tend to be at the forefront of the new anti-PC movement, which is more obnoxious than we were back in the 90s. And, you know, I was part of that. You know, I was your typical standard issue, right, libertarian punk rock chick. So, you know, very anti-PC and obnoxious about it. But this has become, that's not necessarily a defense of free speech, and that's sort of the real issue that would make sense here. The philosophical issue would be about speech, not about so much about concern about that people feel sensitive towards others. Like, yes, it's, you know, some racial slurs really are horrible things to say, and, you know, there's, you don't necessarily in polite conversation need to share your particular feelings about people's sexual orientation or their religious beliefs or whatnot, but that's a very different thing from defending free speech, and I think also too defending the attitude. I mean, I think it's terribly important for libertarians, if they want to live in the real world, to be extremely tolerant. And the only way they're going to be able to spread their ideology is if they learn how to deal with people who are different from them. And this sense of, you know, trying to police each other is not going to bode well for the free society as well. So it's just there's an ethical issue about, you know, using, you know, manipulation and large, you know, and angry words and, you know, the prospect of being ostracized if you express yourself. So these are all real things, but I came across this is the man from Breitbart. His name was Milo Yiannopoulos. Seems to be kind of floating his way through the libertarian movement, and I'm just not really sure that that's like a product I really ordered or wanted to buy. And the people related to his orbit, just kind of, you know, that they're, you know, being loved by libertarians quite openly. These are not particularly charming or funny people, by the way. These are kind of knockoffs of various other libertarians who do their shtick much better. But I'm not exactly enthusiastic about this crossing level between tolerance, which is good, which cosmetarians are not. The DC Beltway libertarians are horribly intolerant. It's not some paleo libertarian thing that people try to stick. And the cosmetarians are just as bad, and in some ways quite hypocritical and much worse. But it's not any particular sect. I mean, there's a lot of this going on in the movement and always has been. But yeah, I'm not so sure that people who, you know, like to, you know, have, you know, cute pictures of swastikas or, you know, adorable Nazi, you know, regalia, or kind of, you know, the really kind of making sure that they use every possible horrible, crude, vulgar racial slur possible in their Twitter accounts and whatnot. That's not really, maybe, I don't think that's maybe the best way for us to appeal to the most people.
I think we can embrace treating other people, you know, kindly without having to accept the violence of the other camp. That would be something we should be an example in a way. We wouldn't like to be associated with those people either, right? I listened to one, well, not so prominent libertarian talking about we are gonna win, and he was talking about, I have to go back to that, say Donald Trump, and that's not we.
That's his clique.
Yeah, that's his. You were talking about cliques before, and yeah, that's real. And
I think that's the problem, and you see it in language. Language is collectivized too, and you know, some of it is deemed appropriate, and some of it is deemed, you know, inappropriate or un-PC or whatever. And I wonder the. You know, you had mentioned, Angela, that certain people feel the need to police other people's language via this PC movement. Do you think that's just an extension of the state getting people to police, getting, you know, individuals to kind of police and shame other individuals' actions, you know, as an extension of the state?
No, I just think human beings are tribal apes.
Yeah, I think we are.
So yeah, are we
no
more
hope.
Enlightened?
There's no hope because, here.
Well, does that mean that people, individuals that think like you and I, does that mean that we're somehow more enlightened because we'll tolerate that horrible nasty speech as long as that speech doesn't infringe on our rights?
I'm sure this will come back and kick me in the face in my serious career, but I do think in the sense that overall libertarians, and I mean the whole broad group, tend to be, you know, tend to have more sophisticated views on the individual, and the word you said was individual, that the idea that the individual exists and is real. But I don't think most people, that's not how most people think about the world, and I don't think libertarians do themselves any good when they explain the ideology when they don't understand that. And it's just like, I say, like, you know, there's no, individuals are few and far between yet. We're still kind of in that, you know, stage of collectivism. But yeah, we're tribal monkeys. I mean, we might have better clothing and do better tricks and stuff, but I don't think we've moved that far past being that yet to, like, you know, being, you know, fully realized human beings where there's a real sense of individuality. It's when you just talk to people, it's, you know, and I know people need generalizations because the language is a conspiracy. I understand all that, but it's still, people are just not ready to see individual human beings yet.
It's hard even to talk in a way that reflects that, because all the language we have is categories and ways of talking about groups of things. Otherwise, how would we even express? I don't know. It becomes really hard, and that's the whole point with PC. It makes something that's already hard harder to just not reference any kind of categories or any kind of groups or. How would you talk about human beings all the time?
I wonder how much the PC movement is failure to recognize and understand the individual as opposed to just not wanting to offend anyone. Because it seems like it's all about, oh, you can't offend anyone. Like, being offended is somehow wrong.
And there's also the assumption that most people are, you know, run around in perpetual offense. I mean, other people have just bigger concerns than, you know, stupid jokes and words. And women, and, you know, God, I'm sure I'm going to get crap for this, and I probably should, but, you know, most women do, to some degree, live under, you know, quite a bit of sexism as the normal way of living, and somehow we cope. And, you know, life goes on even under the patriarchy, and I just don't spend up every day screaming about the great injustice. I mean, I see a lot, and I've written about that, but, you know, it's just, you know, life goes on, the fragility that's assumed in PC and safe spaces just isn't the real world. And why, dear God, especially, why would you want to have your children be that fragile? That's not real.
I don't think we would, but a lot of people, it makes for a better slave class. It's more comfortable, and you're more easily manipulated. So that's why this stuff is pushed as an agenda. Especially somehow I know you mentioned on college campuses.
Somehow you need more protection, right? So you're more docile.
Well, sure. Well, that's why I was going to say the one thing you said before, Chandler, about, you know, it being a failure to recognize the individual as far as PC. But I wouldn't say it's a failure. I'd say that was part of the design.
Yeah.
Because, you know, political correctness, I mean, it started in Russia in the battles between the socialists and the communists. I mean, that's where that's the pretty much the first recorded, I guess, because I remember doing research on this a while back, that's recognized, you know, and that's what it was for. It was used for control. And when the new left brought it over here in the late 50s and early 60s, that's what they were doing it for. It was for control. So I wouldn't say it's a failure. I would say it worked out swimmingly, exactly the way they wanted it to.
Some of these things had real consequences. I mean, some of them were, you know, I mean, in retrospect, probably not good, you know, horrible catastrophes. Like, the left threw our student newspaper into the lake.
Why don't you take that and continue when we come back from market. Get something from the market. We'll be back.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
It's just a computer glitch.
Thought I was pointing you.
Meow.
And well, we're back, and I have to tell the story about the newspapers in the lake. So back before we had a libertarian newspaper, different story, on college campus that I was at, we had a conservative student newspaper where the libertarians wrote, and that's basically where the only place libertarians could write then, because everything had shifted where libertarians were back aligned basically with the neocons. It was a dark and dismal time, and I freely admit my error of my youthful ways there, but there's some big point, but I think my brain lost it there somewhere. There were some other issues. There's some of the real consequences of actual political correctness on campus, and that's dealing with speech codes. And it's come back, and the left will not admit this, and the left will die before they admit to the libertarians that this is actually what has happened. But because of speech codes, and because of the way political correctness has become so fascistic, is that on college campuses, a lot of pro-Israel groups have managed to really shut down. They're doing a really good job at shutting down, speech that objectively explains the Palestinian situation, and it's being used under all these speech codes and these great ideas that the left had in the 90s that would make a more civilized campus, has now it's basically now used as an accomplice to apartheid state. So. That's a real world thing. It's not just libertarians griping about, oh, we can't say bad words, or we can't look at a woman's bottom, or whatever the heck people are going to complain and gripe about, like grumpy old libertarian men. But like that, it has real consequences, and it does. I mean, the silencing and not being able to have real discussions about all kinds of things, and when it comes to safe spaces and so on, discussions of rape and abuse and domestic violence have to happen, and they have to happen open and publicly and as inclusively as possible. I mean, inclusively as possible. The safe space thing is a deep setback to. People do what they want, whatever they can, and they're entitled to whatever feelings they want. But making this is a way of conducting policy is deeply. I mean, it's the silence is what allows these things to exist.
Again, I come back to. I think it's all part of it's by design. It helps to further the agenda of the state. And you're right, it does have real-world consequences. I mean, you can look at it in some of the more radical libertarian circles where, we don't just question why do you need a master, the whole need for government at all. That used to be a somewhat legitimate and acceptable discussion to have. Now, a lot of times you're classified as like some kind of terrorist or domestic, whatever, it's automatically assumed that you want to do violence to people when you have these sort of discussions, and no, you we don't. We're just trying to ask tough questions, admittedly, but honest questions, and why do you want to shut that down?
The idea of a safe space in colleges and universities is something that, being living and working and doing everything outside of the U.S., comes in really, really, really weird to me. As you know, it's not safety from physical aggression or harassment. It's safety from ideas or opinions that might offend you. And that's really weird for a university. That's just my perspective from outside of the U.S.
Isn't that what you are supposed to go to a university to do, is to learn, to gain different perspectives, to be challenged?
Yeah, that's supposedly.
What do you want to stay in kindergarten your whole life? I mean, come on.
Yeah, that is for sure. Or it should be. Kindergarten should be a safe space. But, that doesn't have to go all the way to till you're 30.
Well, I don't know, man. I did some pretty wild things and associated with some pretty questionable people in my youth and experienced some things. And I never needed a safe space. And I think I grew for that experience. I don't see why we would deny that to children of a younger generation. That's for sure.
Yeah. The experience is valuable. And also, but if anything becomes a safe space, is after you leave. The space becomes safer after you leave the government prisons of regimented education. It was a big thing for me when I went out of high school into college to start being able to relate to different people you like to relate to, and that's the opposite of government. I don't know why we'd let government solve that for us. I wouldn't.
The only safe space is the one that I like is the one I'm in right now. It's got lots of handguns around me.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum. When you shop online, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you any extra, and the fiends will get a little taste from Amazon, and Amazon will save you the danger of drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon sells pretty much everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom. So get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com. Freedom, Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, Sierra.com.
We're back. Freedom Fiends.
We're in our safe space.
Exactly. This is my safe space. Absolutely. So we were discussing safe spaces and PC and
freedom of speech. I just can't say what I think most college kids are these days on the radio, but, you know.
They're cats. Safe
spaces.
Kitty cats.
Yes. Well, that's what they are. Yes.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, we were talking about the... you know, the idea that college originally was supposed to be a place for ideas and, you know, for people to experience different things. But, I mean, I just look at the safe spaces as just an extension of the whole direction the, you know, quote-unquote higher education has been taking for years, where it's just been going more and more leftist, and they're more, you know, there are less and less competing views there. So this just helps them perpetuate that. And it's also a perpetuation of just the coddling of kids and people in general over the years, where people think that things need to get done, somebody has to do something, and it's okay to be you have a right to be offended, and you have a right to have somebody do something about it because your feelings got hurt. It's insane.
Well, I think it perpetuates that entitlement mentality as well. I think the whole college experience does, because, you know, you spend thousands and thousands of dollars upon a useless degree that you can't use in the real world, and you expect to be compensated for it because you did that. You chose to do that. You know, the whole time you're in college, you're maintained in this safe little bubble, and you're gaining, typically it's useless knowledge. At least that was my experience with college, but, you know.
I was thinking back when I was saying earlier about the more on this, that, you know, having safe spaces or having trigger warnings in front of the most important things that people should be talking about, like rape or sexual violence of any kind, or domestic violence, or, you know, things, you know, harassment, all these things that you know, they want to have trigger warnings about, and as if to label them, these things should not be discussed, these things are too scary to talk about, when that's the same silence that allowed that whole system to begin with. And I was thinking about this, is that, you know, one of the things that people have wanted women to do is speak up about rape. And Chrissy Hynde, this has happened several months ago, but Chrissy Hynde was criticized over rape remarks. What had happened was she was, I guess, basically gang raped by, I guess, a biker gang. And I think this is basically kind of the summary of that story. But she talked about it, and she, you know, talks about, you know, what she, you know, that she made a lot of poor judgment calls in dealing with this particular group of people when it was clear they had violent tendencies, and, you know, talked about basically how, you know, just, you know, you can't trust potentially violent men, so don't go near them. And basically, I mean, yeah, I guess people took it as, you know, victim blaming, but, you know, we can't say, like, on with one hand, like, we want, you know, women who've been raped to speak up and then become completely angry and outraged when they actually talk about how they feel about the experience. I think it's a deeply disturbing psychological trend now that I hear this in all kinds of areas, but like when a victim or just someone who would describe him or herself as having something happened to him or her, something that happened in life, not even putting the word victim on it, and then people projecting literally all their neurosis on this person, like, my God, how dare you say this victim blaming, and, you know, what's wrong with you, and there's something wrong in your head, you're normalizing this. And you know, what Chrissy Hynde basically is doing is just learning how to, you know, she didn't become a neurotic, nervous disaster wreck after being raped. And as long as we keep on making things like this the most horrible thing that can ever happen to a woman, you know, there's never going to be any social change. I mean, this is like, it's a horrible, you know, things are horrible enough. Why do we insist on putting stigmatizing labels or projecting our own psychology where we have no business putting ourselves in that place?
Do you think this kind of language discourages people from being held accountable for their actions or inactions?
I think human beings avoid responsibility whenever they can.
Well, yeah, that's true. Does the whole PC movement make it worse, though?
You know, it's part of the culture wars, I think. I mean, I try to think about, you know, why this, you know, maybe a combination of class anxiety and you know, this is what we're going to keep people divided about while they continue to lose their property, large banking, Wall Street empire, all the obvious ills of the world that are in your face and everyone sees every day, that, you know, we cannot form mass movements that would really change those things. I mean, attempts have been made, but I mean, if you want real social change, it has to be on the ground, and it would have to be against, you know, police state and empire. And as long as they can keep you looking, you know, not looking at the source of the conflicts. Yeah.
Yeah. I've long thought that the powers that be, you know, all these different groups that are vying for control over the U.S. empire and the empires around the world, they love to foster divisions within people, because if people get past these very superficial divisions that are created, then they can unite against a common enemy. And that's like the power broker's worst nightmare. So I think that's why you see a lot of this nonsense perpetuated.
Yeah, if we're being robbed and we're being robbed and being controlled every day, what's the, well, the idea is to have us look the other way, and, you know, maybe someone somewhere is saying things that would trigger you or mean things to you, and you would be offended. Like, that matters compared to the other thing.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you bring it down to a basic level, right? You know, I talk to people all the time, and, you know, I got this one guy I talked to is like, well, you know, it's these damn Democrats in office that are, you know, taxing us to death, and they don't understand you know, how it's killing the working man, and so they're focusing on this party difference. But when you talk to them about fiat currency or private central banks or the war state, their eyes just glaze over. They have no clue, because they've been conditioned to just talk about these us versus them, you know, these subtle differences, and, you know, that's not going to address the real issue. So when people like us talk about that, you know, suddenly we're this radical, you know, we want violence, or we're unsafe, you know, that sort of thing.
Yeah, we're the crazy ones, because we'd like to do things a little bit differently, maybe, perhaps.
Yeah,
yeah, we're the crazy ones, because we're pointing out the obvious instead of just, you know, going to very subtle differences.
But that's
differences.
The thing, it's not obvious to so many people.
Yeah, it's like that.
Well, yeah, because it's not supposed to be. Like, exactly, you know, like you were saying, it's the whole divide and conquer thing. I mean, it's funny, a lot of you know, a lot of conservatives or Tea Party types or generally, even some, I guess, neocons too, like love to point to, like, you know, they talk about Cloud and Piven and they say, oh, you see, and this is, a, it's like, it's the left. They've always been doing this. It's like, well, no, it they didn't start it. This has been going on for, you know, for much of human history, this divide and conquer tactics. It's just the way things go. Yeah. And the political classes have just adopted it and they use it to their advantage.
And yeah, I think it goes back to what Angela was saying about the whole tribal mentality.
And, exactly.
And the political classes just capitalize on that.
Yeah. Just like anything else, you know, just like the religious classes originally capitalized on everything. You know, they played on people's fears and they created these stories and these, you know, and put the fear of God in people. and then the state took over and it just perpetuated the same exact thing. And it's because I say that nowadays it's a Twitter and meme universe, because it pretty much is. People's attention spans are, I think, at an all-time low. But actually, if you look back at it, people's attention spans have always been relatively low. They're easily distracted, especially when they're in large groups. And it's easy to pull the wool over their eyes and just say, hey, you didn't see that, or this didn't happen 2 years ago. Don't worry about that. It's not the same thing again, because we put a new name on it. And people go, oh, okay.
what do you guys do about...
The cycle continues.
What do you guys do about, you know, when you get sick and tired of all this PC nonsense and all this corralling in, you know, people's feelings? Because apparently
I'm just tired of the anti-PC.
What?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just as tired as I am of the PC nonsense. Yes. I'm just as tired of the anti-PC nonsense. Exactly. I'm tired of hearing about it.
Exactly. That's my point. Because for some people, what they like to do or they choose to do is just go the other way. Forget about the NAB. Forget about the principles and just really, really hate on those leftists. I've seen that, and I'm tired of both too. But you know, what's your take on that? What do you do? Just try to stick to your principles and avoid that temptation.
I just stay away from those people in general because there's really no winning.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah,
I just say anyway. Loudly.
You just what, Angela?
Oh, I just. I mean, I don't get defensive about it. I just say, like, I just say, and I just repeat. And this is to both people who are, you know, enforcing PC policedom, which is all it is. I mean, it's just there's the anti PC, just a rightish right wingy form of PC. It's not anything original. But I mean, people do this, but. I just always say loudly and clearly, not with any rancor, that it is none of my business what other people think or do with their lives or their cultural preferences and personal choices. I have there's no justice in me interfering in that. I have no moral right to other people's minds, and that's just a basic human right.
Amen.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. I would say that too. It's the best way to go about it. I'm thinking of certain celebritarians right now, but you know, I wouldn't give them more recognition that they need.
Well, exactly. What else are you going to do? You can either follow them or try to ignore it the best you can and just state your position and move on, you know? I mean, I say things that offend people all the time, but I don't mean to offend people. I just speak honestly. I tend not to worry about feelings most of the time. If I'm just speaking about ideas and principles, I'm not really necessarily worried. You know, I don't think about feelings all the time, so I don't. You know, I catch myself. People like automatically think I'm trying to offend them. I'm like, no, there's nothing. You know, we can have a rational discussion about things. But I'm not going to. You know, I'm not going to censor myself. But I'm also not going to go to that extreme because that just leads to more problems.
Yeah, worms. We'll be back for the final segment with the Fiend's Redemption in the third act.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
For some reason in this country, and in a bunch of Western world, it's okay to just judge.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. Computer programmer Derek Slopey and I have created Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about FiendPhone.
FiendPhone is free, no-gov software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality, remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try FiendPhone right now at FiendPhone.com, but we're also raising money to vastly improve FiendPhone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to FiendPhone.com to help out. Who will build the audio roads? We will, with your help.
That's FiendPhone.com, FeenPhone.com. Foxtrot, Echo, Echo, November, phone.com.
FiendPhone, I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Meow. Worms. Meow. Meow, meow.
No PC here. So yeah, in the last segment, we were kind of talking about, you know, how we handle this whole thing. And like one of the things I do is I don't go out of my way to offend anyone. And I also don't go out of my way to not offend anyone. I just try to talk about my principles and my beliefs. And I constantly understate the fact that they are mine and I don't expect anyone else to hold them. People are free to, you know, speak and believe whatever they want as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else. And I think when you frame it in that, both sides, both the PC and the anti-PC will at least listen to you, you know. I don't censor myself, like I said, but I do tend to be like, well, you know, you have your right to your opinion, and I value that, but here's what I think, and you know, hey, as long as we're not duking it out in the streets, you know, what does it matter? This is the honest exchange of ideas. And that tends to at least get people to listen. You know, they may think I'm crazy, which probably a lot of times they do, but hey, at least they're listening, right? You know, you're planting that seed. And I think that's one of the best things you can do is just to kind of plant that seed of individualism in people. And hopefully it'll grow.
Yeah, you're not invested in whatever conclusions they may have with respect to what you're saying, which is the other side of this deal. It's, take responsibility for your own opinions, your own words. And then, you know, if people get offended, you not be very invested in that. Unless, of course, they could show you
to be them.
Yeah, it sucks to be them. Unless, of course, they could show you for... Probably you could be very careful they don't shun you from some, I don't know, libertarian camp or whatever.
Yeah, some event. But if they do shun you from some event, then you just go out and create a new one, a better one. Built that. That's what you can say.
Yeah.
As Bender says, what does Bender say? I'll go start my own libertarian festival with blackjack and hookers. In fact, forget the libertarian festival. So yeah,
you go ahead and you print yourself a BIP code license for all that.
Yeah, and you're all good then.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and these movements progress. You know, somebody at some point forks the movement into something else. And then, well, that happens in software. People do a fork it into a better alternative. And if that one sticks, then we all move to the new one.
It's market forces, baby. That's all it is. Evolution, market forces. Whatever works.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think what you said about, you know, planting the seeds, that's always the most important thing for me, because trying to convince people to change their mind about things is nearly impossible of the time. You're dealing with so much, cognitive dissonance, confirmation biases, the backfire effect, everything. It's just like you said, you put the idea there and you walk away. I mean, I even think like taking that to the extreme of like, you know, the thing I've heard, Larkin Rose and a couple other people say sometimes, you know, literally just walk past people. And as you just like mention like random things like taxation and stuff, then walk away. And just you know, even if they think you're completely insane, at least you've put that thought in their head. And now that at some point down the road, somebody else may say something similar to them, and they'll go, "Hey, wait a minute, I've heard that before. Why have I heard that before?" And then they may look it up, you know, or whatever it is. You just throw ideas. You know, government's illegitimate. I've started doing that. I do it all the time when I walk dogs. You know, because that's half what I do half my day. And when I meet people on the street, they'll ask me questions. And as I walk away, it's usually one of the last things I say. I just throw a random phrase out there like that. And I smile and nod and just walk away.
Taxation is theft.
Yeah, just anything like that. you know, I think it's a much better use of my time than trying to argue with people all the time. Because that just makes my head hurt.
A lot less stressful.
I like that guerrilla tactics for achieving liberty. Just walk beside somebody, just throw it out. Taxation is left.
Exactly.
Gorilla memes.
Thank you, Jeremy. Thank you, Chandler. And thank you, Angela.
Awesome. Yeah, this has been great.
Well, everyone out there, take care. Stay safe. Stay individual.
And remember, taxation is theft. Just saying.
Spread those memes.
You know, puppies,
worms,
rainbows, ponies, and taxation is theft.
Unicorns. Yeah.